in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Last week, we gave you a teaser of tonight's episode, which is a conversation with James Tucker and Michael Jelenic, producers of Batman the Brave and Bold. Don't forget, the show airs 7:30 Eastern and Pacific Time Friday nights on Cartoon Network with reruns throughout the weekend. We've had new episodes since the start of January, and they continue in the weeks ahead. In our conversation, you're going to get plenty of teasers of characters and storylines that are coming up, but also you're going to get a general overview of the DC Universe in animation. Michael and James' history go back to the days of Batman the Animated Series and every iteration of superhero animation through Superman the Animated Series, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, Superman and the Legion of Superheroes, the Batman series, and the current Brave and Bold. You're finally going to get a lot of answers to questions like, why did Justice League or Teen Titans end after five successful seasons and the feeling that really things could have continued, at least from the fan standpoint? Plus, what comes through is both guys show a great appreciation for the DC universe of characters and the stories that they are retelling and the new ideas that they're coming up with as well. I hope you enjoy this special conversation we had from Word Balloon.
It was really interesting to read on IMDb your past credits because I wasn't sure if this was your... What's that?
That are correct are the ones that are, you know, erroneous, but go ahead.
Well, you tell me, because it seemed like you guys had been doing a lot of work in Warner's animation and specifically in the superhero world leading up to this Brave and Bold series. Why don't you tell me, guys, Michael, why don't we start with you and, you know, tell me some of the other superhero shows that you've worked on.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I came to Warner Animation probably in 2003, I really didn't have that big of a background in comics. So I'm like the opposite of James. And I was sort of thrown into the Batman world, which out of all the sort of characters I knew the most of, I knew, you know, most his rogues and whatnot. But since I've been here, I've slowly been getting onto more and more obscure properties. So, you know, after Batman, I went on to Legion, which I knew Legion of Superheroes, which I barely knew anything about, and you know that universe has like 1,000 characters of the most bizarre people. And then, you know, transitioning from that over to Batman Brave and the Bold, it's basically been, you know, it's like topping ourselves trying to find characters that you know, most people have never heard of. So I've gotten a pretty good education in the comic book world since being here.
I think the great thing, this is James, I think it's to the credit of the shows that Michael doesn't know shit about comics. And I'm the comic book geek. So, because I find, in the past, I've worked with comic book writers who become writers for cartoons. And there's a little hesitance to go toward the cheese that can be in comics.
Sure.
Michael has no preconceived ideas about using, you know, Starro or, you know, Rainbow Batman or all the goofy, you know, Batman of Zur-En-Arr and, you know, I mean, all that really goofy stuff that a lot of comic book, you know, writers and try to get away from or think we've outgrown.
I mean,
but that's fun stuff. And any time I throw out something, he's runs with it, which I love. He's really easy working with him in that respect.
So I get to react to stuff that James says. Like, I, you know, literally haven't heard of Haunted Tank before. And, you know, she says Haunted Tank, my mind goes in a million directions. But now the irony is, like, you tell Haunted Tank doesn't seem like a weird character at all.
So not at all.
I become jaded to the bizarreness.
Well, you know, say, okay, imagine if Denver Pyle from the Dukes of Hazzard was a Confederate soldier and he inhabited this tank from World War II. You know, I mean, if you break it down, if I break it down into 80s iconography, he gets it like that, you know. Oh, it's great. It's like he's a great fan of 80s television.
That's my point of reference, right. Alf and Charles.
Right.
Charge.
And mine is kind of a generation ahead of that, you know, late 60s, early 70s DC Comics. So that's how we come up with the energy that comes with Batman, the Brave and the Bold. But we kind of maybe sidetracked you from your train of thought there.
Not at all. And actually, you've gone into an area that I want to get into because that is the brilliance, I think, as an older viewer of the show. Because I grew up reading those late 60s and early 70s comic books as well. So that is the fun. And you guys have managed to take what on the surface can look very hokey to today's audience if you go back and read those old Dick Sprang Batmans, as you say. But you guys have brought that look with a modern sensibility. And also, I guess we have to include Andrea Romano, too, who is she very involved in casting?
Oh, yeah. She's I mean, totally.
Okay. Because I think it's that combination that makes us older viewers excited, but also your guys writing and directing as well makes it palatable for this younger audience, and it works on all levels. And I've watched it with little kids, and they've enjoyed it. And again, being an adult, I appreciate the action and the nods to these characters, which, and again, I guess because, James, you're a fan too, you're spot on with your characterization of a lot of these guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to use all the cliches I've come up with over the course of doing interviews, but I'll fall on a couple. I did it for nerd parents and their offspring. And I wanted to make the show I thought I was seeing when I was watching Adam West Batman and the 60s Spider-Man show.
You bet.
And, you know, even the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, or, you
sure.
know, I mean, when you're a kid, your inner six-year-old sees a whole other show than what's actually on the screen. And you'll be 80 years old defending that show to people saying, so I thought, well, let's make a show at least that would give them some ammunition to defend it. You know, so when they are 80 and they're saying, Batman Brave and the Bold was a good show, actually make it a good show. Because, you know, I mean, most people defend shows that, quite frankly, are embarrassing. on life. It's like, you know. I mean, there's guys who hate our show, but they'll look at reruns of G.I. Joe like it's The Wire or something. So, I mean, I just want to make a show that actually holds up in a few years when someone's, you know, probably too old to really have been watching it, but, you know. So that's kind of what we try to make it good, but we also want to embrace the cheese that is inherent in a lot of it. You know, and it's not bad. It's, I mean, for a long time, and I think, you know, rightfully so, every superhero show after Batman, Adam West Batman, thought that was the way you did superhero shows.
Sure.
So that kind of got a bad rap. But that show in and of itself is brilliant, in my opinion, and it really did. It got more right than wrong, but... the only problem was it spawned a lot of copycats and bad, you know, campy versions of trying to do that version of Batman or that version of superheroes. And so we just kind of went back to that and just, you know, did it with a straight face. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think just last week we had a teaser with Batman versus Enemy Ace. And to me, I feel like that teaser sort of sums up the show, you know, because it – we put Batman in World War One. We don't explain how he got there. He's in a bat biplane.
Right.
You know, we don't explain that. He's wearing goggles and a scarf.
Thanks to Michael, because I didn't want him to wear the scarf, but I'm glad we did it.
And yet, you know, you watch that teaser, it's fairly serious. There's no music. The sound design is, like, excellent. And so you're left watching, like, all these things that should be goofy. We're presenting them, like, in a non-sort of goofy and serious way. And so you're almost unsure how to react. And I think that's sort of, like, the enjoyment of the show. It's like you like you guys are saying, you take the cheese seriously. It's like, well, take it how we used to take it.
I mean, the idea is I love DC Universe, like, across the board. I have no favorites. I love it all. So... And Batman, I think, to the wider world, is the touchstone for DC. Like, everyone thinks they know Batman. You know, he's the normal guy. He's the human who doesn't have superpowers, but he's very resourceful. I mean, he's to me, he's more representative of the American ideal than, say, Superman is, even though Superman gets that label a lot more. But so if you have Batman in it, and he has a straight face, and no matter what he's up against, if he's out in space, under the sea, no matter where you put him, as long as he buys it and he's not rolling his eyes or saying that's, you know, bogus, then the audience will embrace it. And using him as a conduit to the greater DC universe, I think, is really the only way you could do it. I don't even know if a Superman show like this would work, although I'd give it a shot.
Well, but, and I remember in the 90s, they did kind of do a Superman team-up.
Yeah, DC Presents, yeah.
Yeah, well, not only in the comics, but also animated. It seems like that last
animated
season.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I was there. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
They had guest stars occasionally on Superman, and And that, you know, and this show kind of takes cues from that because we never explained how he knew Dr. Fate or I forget who else we had on there, but yeah, with they toyed with that on that show a little bit, having him have guest stars, yeah.
But it worked, and but I agree with you that I think and again, the title itself, The Brave and Bold. I mean, once Batman took that magazine over, it really was, and it had its own continuity, and there never needed to be an explanation, and it's fine because they are all part of the DC universe, and that was the more fun, exciting part of it. And again, you guys capture that magic. The Commandy episodes have been great. It was great to see the pre-title sequence with the Challengers of the Unknown.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do because I you know, going into it, I wanted. It's like, well, what if the Challengers had their own TV show in the 60s and Hanna-Barbera had done it, or Filmation? What would it look like? So we referenced, you know, Young Samson and Mitor and
Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest. And there was a Filmation show that I'm drawing a blank on now. Micro Team or something, anyway. And we just YouTubed those main titles. I think Herculoids is the one we were closest to, but those titles were great. So anyway, we came up. We didn't have to do that. We could have just started the teaser on Dinosaur Island and just went into it. It's those little geeky touches we like to do. The what if factor of the show, as if the show existed in the 60s. You know, the show I would have wanted to see when I was a kid. You know, watching cartoons and. You know, saying, oh, I wish they'd do it like they did in the comic, you know, so.
But then, you know, stuff like those little flourishes we do, you know, it's also just a fun way to sort of get exposition, you know.
Sure.
You know, another show might have explained each character and what they did and who they are. Because, you know, we're meeting all these characters for the first time. And, you know, if you don't know who the Challengers of the Unknown are, you might be left in the dark. So, you know, I thought, you know, we constantly are trying to do stuff like, what's a clever way of getting that exposition and bringing the audience up to speed?
Yeah, without doing the dossier type of, you know.
Certainly.
The Batman in the Batcave.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have to know. I think it's more important to know who the person is as a personality than to know all his backstory. You know, we kind of, you know, with comics these days, there's kind of a who's who.
Sure.
Or, you know, who's who in the Marvel Universe.
Well, you bet.
You literally have a Rolodex of... of their, you know, what's their power level and what's their origin and where did they come? You know, people think that's character if you know all that shit about them, and it's really not.
No.
If you can let the audience know what kind of person this guy is, that goes a lot further to letting the audience in on enjoying that character, because we're not really, you don't fall in love with the character based on their backstory. You can fall in love with them based on their. How are they reacting to things, and what's their personality? And I think the thing we like to do on this show is make sure everyone has a strong personality, which, you know, bugs some people. Like, some people don't like Aquaman as being the lovable but somewhat oafish king of the sea. But he didn't have a personality before that, you know? He wasn't. And I remember, I just listened to your interview with Dan Slott where he was talking about the JLA, if they were on the bus... or a train that got caught in a tunnel and wouldn't know who they were.
Yes.
That was I love DC because they're they're icons. And they have there's a lot more freedom for interpretation, but there is a problem with them being all of the same cloth.
And the same voice. No, I totally agree.
Voice, literally in some cases.
Yes.
Know, you go by the animation, but...
Yeah, some of those old Super Friends or even those 60s Filmation cartoons, I agree with you.
Yeah, they were just... interchangeable. And
yes.
So on this show we try to give each character a pushed distinct personality that's in keeping with who they are as a character. I mean, Aquaman acts like a king. He's just, you know, he's not the perfect kind of person that people tend to, comic book fans in particular, love to have characters who are that have no flaws. It's almost like they want them to be like the perfect person. It's okay if every other character has flaws, but they don't want that guy to be, you know, have foibles, basically.
Certainly.
So, and for this show to work, everyone's got to have a distinct personality to bounce off of Batman. So, you know, and it also leads to the humor, but it's affectionate humor. I don't think we're making fun of anybody, character-wise, you know. But
I agree. And also, real quick, I want to know about coming up with the idea of doing this pre-titles, you know, James Bond sort of, you know, intro before you get to the main story. It's wonderful because it's a chance to expose so many characters. And I mean, my God, when you take out the commercials, you guys are dealing with between 20 and 22 minutes of story. Yeah. And the amount of characterization, action, dialogue, everything that you guys are able to put in, it's incredible. And I mean, really, God, go back to those old Johnny Quests, and as much as we like them, you know, those things, you know, you can, you know, mark the time with an hourglass as opposed to a stopwatch.
Sure.
With the slow pace of those things.
Well, the thing I came into working at Warner's on the Superman show and then, you know, those, the Bruce Timm and Alan Burnett produced mm-hmm. shows, and they really had revolutionized how you treat a half-hour, you know, cartoon. Because prior to that, well, Johnny Quest did it, but, you know, I mean, they really made the time stretch. You know, they did it like a drama. The pacing was slower. You know, you started out with the security guard at a desk, and he hears something, and then he gets knocked out, and then you see the villain, and then, you know, the villain steals, I mean, Batman. You know, I mean, there was definitely a formula to it. A great formula, but, you know, it was very structured and very methodical and kind of, I say, slow to get going for my attention span.
Like Scooby-Doo, like those old Scooby-Doos, too, yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, you know, well, let's see how much story we can fit in 22 minutes. And I'm a DC fan, and I said, if we let the teaser only lead into the main story of the show, that means that's... So if we do 13 episodes, that's 13 less heroes I can play with. I'm like, well, let's make the teaser totally separate. Basically do a short featuring Batman and this character, and then let the rest of the show be a whole other story. And really, purely, it came about because I just, again, have a short attention span. I wanted to be able to play with as many of these characters as possible. And that was only... And I'm a fan of the short form, like... The idea that, you know, on Space Ghost, you had two Space Ghosts and a Dino Boy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, those were stories. They had beginning, middles, and ends. Nobody felt they needed to see a whole Space Ghost adventure for a half hour. You know, no one felt cheated.
True.
Like, you know, there's only so much you have to have to tell a story. And it doesn't have to extend a full 22 minutes. And I'm, you know, I think our stories are very layered for what, you know, for the way we do them. And we managed to fit a three-act story without, you know, our teasers typically are 2 to 3 minutes,
yeah.
I think.
I mean, the teaser, you know, at first the teaser is like a huge challenge, at least from the writing aspect, because, you know, like James is saying, you do a teaser that's completely unrelated to the story, that's 3 minutes less you can, you know, focus on developing a story. And at first I thought that could be sort of a big challenge, but... It actually just forced us to simplify, and that's sort of like something we do with everything, you know, try to keep things as simple and iconic as possible. So we would stay away from complicated plots, and you know, it mostly became a show about characters and, you know, how the characters interact, and you know, the punchline is always between the relationship, not necessarily what the plot is. And so, you know, that it was sort of a risky move. I mean, it's a risky move on every level because we have to design more characters.
Yeah,
more
it creates a lot more work than we normally would do on a superhero show.
And we weren't sure people were going to get the format at first. We weren't sure people were going to be able to, you know, there was that question, are they going to understand that this teaser is not going to have anything to do with the rest of the episode? But
I think,
you know,
we kind of slowly got them used to it by the first three aren't totally detached from the main plot of the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our Blue Beetle teaser was Green Arrow and the Batman. And so when we come to the main part of the story, Blue Beetle and his friend are watching what we just saw on TV. So, you know, we did things to bridge it before we totally cut the teaser off from the rest of the show. So it was a way to get people used to the idea. But now, I don't know exactly when we actually totally just started making the teaser stand alone, but we've been going, you know, ever since. It's just been, you know, no looking back as far as doing that. So, and we try to mess with the format as much as possible, you know, whenever we can. But
yeah, it's a fun opportunity, you know, to take ideas that you can't devote to a whole episode and do it in the teaser. You know, for instance, we're doing a teaser based on like the Rainbow Batman cover.
Yeah.
And you know, we can never fit that into a whole episode.
No, sure. Nor would you have wanted to.
Yeah, but, that's a little too much. I understand.
Right. So, but you know, just I think it's going to be fun just to see that cover. Even
oh,
if
yeah.
the rest of the teaser sucks, but
well, say that again. I didn't hear you.
He said, it'll be fun. It's fun to recreate those 50s moments, which is kind of sort of what Grant Morrison was doing with the comics in a different way with the Batman comics. He was using that 50s and Silver Age stuff and twisting it. I think we're doing it a little bit more earnestly. You know, we're not really saying, you know, Batmite is a demon from another world or something. I don't know. I didn't read all of it, you know. You know, he's going to that well, too, but we're kind of redoing. Like, for instance, we did do the Batman of Zurin R episode is coming up.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's really cool. We just finished it, and it's going to be something to see.
Fun cast, too.
It's really fun.
Are we allowed to see who's in that cast?
We weren't told not to, but... Anyway, just say the Batman of Zurin R's and the actor who plays the Batman of Zurin R's initials are KC.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, and speaking of which, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I think we can all do the math and know who you're talking about, of course, the great Kevin Conroy, who was the voice of the animated Batman for so long. And I can understand, and I have to admit, I was kind of in that camp as well when I heard that not only on your series but the previous series that they were going to change and not use Kevin.
Sure.
I think a lot of fans, you know, there was obviously that whole fandom that, you know, it's got to be one way or no other way. But you can also appreciate if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And Kevin, to a generation, really was, until the Christopher Nolan movies, a definitive Batman.
Sure, and I think he will be. You know, he and Adam West, I think, you know, he's kind of locked into that. And I mean, part of that, I think, is just because he's done it so long. I mean, but not, you know, no taking away from the fact that he's just really good. He's a great actor doing it, too. But, you know, I just think for our show, even though we are using actors from, we are using actors who have a connection with Batman in different ways. Like, you know, we used Adam West and Julie Newmar, and, you know, we had Lauren Lester, who was Robin on the Batman the Animated Series, do a voice, each Green Lantern.
So, oh, that's cool.
I like using them in cameos. I just think for the way we needed our show to be and this Batman to be, there was a different quality that was kind of needed.
Sure.
I mean, Diedrich's great. I mean, he...
Absolutely.
Comedic timing, which, you know, of course, if you say comedic timing in relationship to Batman, people roll their eyes. But really, even though his deliveries are just deadpan, there's a comedic timing necessary to do that. And not to say Kevin couldn't do it, but it just, and we needed a different quality to the voice. And I don't know if it's because Diedrich's a dad or he's just a generally, you know, friendly guy. Not saying Kevin isn't, but I'm just saying...
Oh, no, I understand.
We wanted that there was a quality we needed for this Batman that was a little otherworldly. The thing I like about Kevin's Batman is it's very rooted in reality. He doesn't overplay anything. He catches the Shakespearean elements of Batman. I mean, he's compared it to Hamlet. But we didn't need that for this.
No,
it was almost... He was, you know, it just was... It wasn't... That Batman we were doing. So.
Well, but not only visually, but I think in its actual tone, in story and dialogue as well, this Batman is akin to the Silver Age Batman. And, you know, in my conversation with Neil Adams, we talked about how, you know, the character started in the 40s and was the Dark Avenger and the Night Avenger. And then somewhere in the early 40s to the 50s, he became the policeman's friend and a daytime character. And
I mean, the Dark Batman wasn't that long. I mean,
right.
From what I read, he wasn't a huge hit until he became more accessible and Robin joined him. And I mean, you know, his solo years weren't that long.
No.
You know, I mean, the world at large knows Batman and Robin. Of course, now that's changed since the Burton movies and now with Nolan. But for the longest time, it was Batman and Robin.
You bet.
And there is there's a wealth of material out there where that's what you get. And there's a whole world of, and you know, not to, again, go back to defending Adam West Batman, but a lot of those episodes were direct translations of 50 stories.
Certainly.
Goldfinger wrote, so, you know, I mean, people want to disparage certain aspects of Batman's history and ignore them and think that that's not, you know, as valid as other aspects, and it's like, it's all Batman. You know.
Well, you guys were very succinct, I think, in giving Batmite that wonderful speech in that episode that I can even, you know, point it at some fans that I know that get very, you know, defensive about the Dark Avenger Batman, and that really is the only Batman. And they're wrong. And again, it's that's what makes the character great, that it is flexible enough to fit all these different roles. And I think, again, Diedrich, you're totally right. He is a father figure, and he's a trainer, and you see that in the series. And it comes through in his characterization.
He's the host into the world of DC. You know, and
yes.
Correctly, DC, when we cast Diedrich, he knew immediately what his role in the show was. He told us, he said, my role is just to be the host here. So, you know, because he's the one constant from every week, there's new people coming in to do voices, but Diedrich's the one continuous thing. There is no cast but him. And so he realizes his role is to make all the other actors feel comfortable being there, you know, to set the tone for it. And basically he's the introduction, like Batman is, to this world of DC characters. So he has a more laid-back, less angst-ridden attack on the role that I think works. And, you know, the thing about this show is, as far as the Batman history and stuff, I like to think of it, this show as the thing that crawled up and killed the bug that got up the ass of all the Batman fans. You know, because it's like, okay, guys, yeah, there is the Dark Knight, there is Batman had a gun for, what, a year? I mean, it's not like that is his whole history. And that's not who he wouldn't have survived if he had stayed that Batman for...
Agreed.
No one talks about the Shadow anymore. The Shadow isn't a prominent character because he didn't change. So, you know, I mean, it's like they want to pick and choose what is real Batman and what's not. And it's like, okay, I've got, you know, 30 years of comics to say this Batman is that Batman too. So.
No, I'm with you, man. And Michael, I feel bad because James and I have been like geeking out, and you know.
Oh yeah. No. James gets on his Batman soapbox. I'm used to this.
Well, no, but Michael, I wanted to ask about one episode in particular, and that's the Music Meister episode, because I at least on IMDb, you're credited with writing it. Is that correct?
Well, it's ironic. We just talked about this.
Yeah, you know, I feel bad. I mean, I wrote it, but I mean. And the honest truth of it is, like, I had the least amount to do with that. I mean, you have Ben Jones, who directed that, and all his board guys who had it was hugely complicated just to board. And then, you know, the thing that sells that episode really is the music. And, you know, James helped me out with a lot of the lyrics. And
because
for all those lyrics, you know, there really isn't that much script to write, because we basically wrote the songs first and then sort of crafted the script around it, more or less. And... it was, like, literally the easiest writing job I ever had.
Yeah. So, and I think originally you were going to write all the songs, and one night I just woke up and I realized that we were getting close to the deadline. I said, you know, we may need more than 3 songs. And I was like, I don't know if Michael can do all of those. And we needed more songs because we decided we were going to fill up a lot this episode. And I didn't even know if they were going to be any good or not. So I wrote a couple of songs, but I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, he just showed up with 2 songs, and I was pissed because the whole reason I wanted to do a musical was for the royalties on the
show. Right. any writer, if there's music in any episode of a TV show, it's the writer wants to do it to get royalties. Yeah.
More than anything, that episode was a group effort, and you know, we put more money into that episode than other episodes. You know, we had a live orchestra play for it. So I mean, everyone
stepped up.
Yeah, and you know, the reaction to it was gratifying. So
I'm glad you mentioned that it was a live orchestra as well, because learning more and more as I do about film and animation, I realize that a lot of times a composer is really at a synthesizer, and what sounds like a full orchestra in a lot of times is really just the composer at a synthesizer. And you don't realize when you have real instruments. Well, now wait, you mentioned royalties, and I want to know, I expect this thing to become like, you know, a Buffy sing-along. eventually, and I certainly hope so, because that's if listeners have not seen that episode in particular, God, the whole cast really outdid themselves. And who's the actress who plays Black Canary?
Greta Lyle.
My God, she was wonderful.
And she was very nervous about doing that. In fact, she asked Deidre to leave the studio while she did it because she was so nervous. She's a great singer, but she was just nervous singing in front of people.
Yeah, and we also crafted a lot of the story around the actors we knew who could sing, too.
Yeah, we had to figure out
who could sing. And then, you know, amazingly, like, most of the actors we use have, like, these amazing voices. So,
NPH, Neil Patrick Harris?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he had done some. He's done voices in the past. He was in a Justice League episode.
You know, he also was in that Spider-Man animated show.
Right.
MTV, yeah.
But I swear, ever since seeing him in the Harold and Kumar, like, you know, I've been a big fan of his. You know, I even watched Doogie back in the day. But before Dr. Horrible came out, I wanted to put him in a superhero musical. And I remember reading an interview with him on Ain't It Cool, and he was talking about he was going to play a supervillain in a musical. I was like, is he joking? Because, like, that was the exact same idea that, you know, I wanted to do. But, you know, I think the fact that he had done that already, you know, I think helped our thing even more. So, you know, there's a little bit of fear that we're going to be going over the same sort of track, but I think it worked out nicely.
Yeah. I'd seen him in a version of Sweeney Todd, of all things. And I didn't know he sang either. So it was like, it was good. And we've been wanting to do a musical on various shows for a while now. You know, if Legion had gotten a third season, we probably would have had them doing a musical. Because a lot of that cast were singers, too.
Very cool. Man, I got to give it up to you guys for that Legion series as well. Because, I know, again, as a guy in his 40s, that this stuff is not meant for me. But it was I wasn't the biggest Teen Titans Go fan, and the Legion was just such a wonderful. It just seemed like, again, much like what you guys are doing now, it satisfied both the younger viewers that I knew who were watching it, and again, as a guy who grew up on, you know, hardcore Legion of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it was fantastic. It really was a great show, and I was disappointed that they didn't get a third series. So
yeah, I mean, you know, well, we were on a sinking ship with that network. So. Yeah,
that's true too. You're right, WB.
I say never say never. So maybe the Legion will come back in some form or fashion. But yeah, that show was. So particularly when Michael came on as story editor the second season, we really pushed it, and it really went in places that I really wanted it to go, and I thought we were really developing, you know, something big that we could have led up to in the third season, but alas.
Well, and that dark future version of Superman was fantastic. I mean,
I didn't really want to do it first. In fact, I was
no kidding.
I was pitching Mon-El because
we love him. We love Mon-El, absolutely.
But and rightfully so, the network said they needed something they could sell as something really different.
They also wanted Superman to be edgier.
Right.
Sure.
And in lieu of actually changing Superman's core character, we created this new character who was basically tied to him. And, I thought he turned out way better than I was expecting. And I predict that in 10 years, some 16-year-old now who becomes a writer for DC will introduce that character into the DC universe.
Isn't it interesting?
And he won't get any credit for it.
Well, and I don't know, because you guys are on the other side of Warner Brothers. It just seems like it's taken forever for the comic book side, since the Batman Beyond series went off the air, to do anything more with Terry McGinnis. And
right.
I think that character became a very popular character and, carved his own little niche. And the few times in the 2000s that he's made appearances since the old Batman Beyond comic book that was tied to the series was canceled, everybody goes apeshit. They love
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes some shows find it takes time for... Again, the 6-year-olds who watched it and didn't think it sucked, like the 25-year-olds who were watching it at the same time.
Yeah.
Once those 6-year-olds grow up and eventually become creators, they go back to what they remember. The same as me going back to Adam West, you know, or...
Hear, hear.
So, James, do you think there's any chance in, like, 15 years that our Aquaman will be the comics version of Aquaman?
Hey, man. Well, you know what? He used to be the comics version of Aquaman. We didn't reinvent the wheel on him, but, you know, that's the thing. The thing about this show is, particularly with that Aquaman episode, is I remember when DC Comics changed for me was when Aquaman's son got killed.
Yeah.
That's when all of DC Comics changed and got darker.
Was that during the crisis? I forget.
No, it was before the crisis.
Okay.
It was a few years before the crisis.
Okay.
But that's when I was as a kid thinking, wow, you know.
Harsh.
This is harsh, yeah. So, for me, DC Comics is its own literal own universe, and I miss when DC Comics didn't want to be Marvel. Not to get in trouble here, but you know, I mean,
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Stories. At the most, they had a two-parter. Now it's, you know, I mean, yeah, you got to do what the market demands, but I miss the simplicity that DC Comics used to have. And that's kind of what right now actually works better for TV. And so I'm like, well, if they're not going to do comics the way they used to do, let's do a show where, the way comics used to be. So that's kind of where our whole standpoint is with this show.
By the same token, though, and I want to give it up again to Michael, because I see that you were the screenwriter for the Wonder Woman DC Animation DVD.
Yeah, very good.
A completely different tone, but yeah, I had a lot of fun on that. James actually is a huge Wonder Woman fan, so I think I've just finished working on Legion at the time, so I would bug James constantly with my Wonder Woman questions.
Well, Michael, I got to tell you, man, there are very few current and modern writers that I think really know what to do with Wonder Woman, because unlike Batman, I think there's a real mishmash of a lot of crappy stories from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even some of the 70s stories. But I loved the tone that you took and really brought it back to her, not only the Amazonian roots, but also as a Greek myself, I loved what seemed to be nods to the style of 300. That came through, at least to me as a viewer in the movie, and it was a Wonder Woman interpretation that I wasn't expecting, and I really had low expectations for the film and was totally blown away. And really, it was, I think, along with Green Lantern, those were the two best cartoons, I think, that DC Animation did for the DVDs in 2009.
Yeah, the polls seem to support your opinion.
and you're right, she's a tough character, and her fans are even more sort of possessive of her. Batman fans.
Possessive, he means psycho.
No, I don't. But, you know, it's that same, James was mentioning it earlier, like they don't want to see their heroes with any sort of weakness. So,
certainly.
I mean, even the fact that Wonder Woman doesn't fly in this, like, caused all sorts of... See, I mean, they want her to be better than Superman, basically,
yeah.
Or but Superman's equal.
Yes.
And it's a very small niche of fans, but, you know, we're trying to make something sort of for mainstream.
Yeah.
But I always feel bad that, you know, sometimes the mainstream choices you make alienate, like, her core fans, and it's a sort of a tricky balance. You don't want to alienate the mainstream, and you don't want to alienate the, you know, the people who love, you know, the character so much. So, I mean, that's what I always find, like, tricky with the job that I have. So, and I always come at it sort of from the mainstream point of view, because, you know, if anything, I'm a Batman fan, so I have my own preferences for him, but yeah, it's crazy. Like, comic book fans, I find, are crazy, and it's a little like for me to go on message boards for anything is always
passionate.
It's always an exercise in self-loathing to see what's happening.
Well, tell me about your Batman. We've heard about James's, what, you know, the portions of Batman that James has loved. What about, what aspects of Batman have you loved through the years?
You know, my brother was a big comic book guy, so he would basically hand me his favorite Batman stuff, and that was during, like, the, you know, sort of when the Burton movie came out and that you know, Miller stuff. So, I mean, I sort of grew up, like, just when he was sort of turning into that you know, gritty sort of character.
Constipated.
Sort of dominate the 90s. And you know, when I worked on the Batman before I worked on the, you know, Batman Brave
yes.
and Bold, and everybody on that show sort of wanted to do that Batman, and they wanted to do they wanted to top what, you know, James and everybody else did on Batman the Animated Series, and they wanted to do something that was sort of like adult and edgy and all that stuff. So and myself too, I was story editor on season 4 of that show, and
the good season.
I was going to say the good. I no offense, man, but yeah, it was the good season.
Well, but the thing I like is I got out all those sort of stories out of my system, because anybody who comes to that Batman property nowadays, they want to tell those sort of – they want to have an opportunity to tell the edgy stories. And I think James and I have sort of got that sort of need out of our system. And so we were able to come to Brave and the Bold like having, okay, we've already done that. That's out of our system. Let's do something. Let's do the opposite. So
yeah, let's make Batman fun again.
You know, but – and it worked. I mean, like, our development process was, you know, let us just do the opposite of everything people normally would do. Batman won't be in Gotham. We won't see Commissioner Gordon. You know, he's practically like superhuman.
Yeah, we don't see Bruce Wayne.
And
yeah.
And you know, so being able to sort of satisfy, like, you know, whatever sort of fanboy, you know, tendencies that I had on the Batman, I think helped, you know, the Brave and Bold be a little bit more fun.
Excuse me, James. Go ahead, I'll get my point in a minute. But you go.
Yeah,
ahead.
I was just I didn't have anything more to say. We're just going to ramble on. Go ahead.
Okay, what I was going to say is I thought it was interesting that during the Batman series, by the way, awesome theme song, The Edge. Nice going. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That you can't go wrong there. But it was interesting that efforts were made to in some ways modernize some characters, like giving the Joker the dreadlocks and things like that. And you guys again went for this retro thing. Green Arrow is a perfect example. We see him in season 4. He's the, you know, pointy bearded blonde like we see in the comics, Ollie. Whereas your guys' Green Arrow really does call back to the Jack Kirby and really even before that, the 40s years, the clean shaven years of Green Arrow and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to start, you know, the show, I wanted it to be kind of in the formative years. I don't even say formative years. When I started reading comics, well, actually, when I started, Green Arrow was the lefty guy, you know. But when I found out where he came from, you know, what he was for the 20 years before that.
Right.
I was like, well, no one's done that in animation. I mean, my first time seeing him in animation was Super Friends, and he had the beard and
yes.
You know, the 70s costume, and I'm like, well, what hasn't been done, you know, what? And I, you know, and I've said something in print somewhere that I think of this show as the Earth 2 version to Batman the Animated Series Earth 1.
Ooh, I like that.
So, you know, it's like, if you will believe in that, you know, and fanboys love the multiple universes,
you bet.
Think of us as the, you know, we're in the, you know, we're the Earth 2 version. You know, we're, you know, we're what Earth 2 used to be to, you know, DC fans back in the 70s and 60s and 70s.
By the same token, though, I think you guys have provided characters like the new Blue Beetle and also even the Ryan Choi Adam a better platform than, you know, the comics. I mean, and taking nothing away from the writers and artists of the comics who did try very hard and I think wrote very good stories, but the public just didn't accept them the way that they seem to have on the Brave and Bold series.
Well, yeah, I mean, the general public just knows what the personalities are. They don't know anything about Ray Palmer or Ted Kord.
Sure, although you guys did the Ted Kord nod, though.
Right, but we're able, you know, the other thing of past shows I worked on was we would avoid, like, the plague doing anything that would appeal to fanboys. Like, the minute we brought up something that would be something fanboys would only fanboys would get, it was immediately dismissed. And so with this, I'm like, well, why not cater them? You know, the average casual viewer, if they don't know what something is, we have Wikipedia now, even though that's... That's got lots of problems, but you know what I'm saying? I think that it's okay to introduce a character that fans may not know of. Let them look it up, you know? I mean, it's not like the first Batman I ever saw, I knew everything about every character in it.
Sure.
Know? So I'm not afraid of the fan wankery that some accused stuff. I mean, I embrace it. I think that's the only thing that gives this show that's different besides the humor is the embracing of DC history and trying to reconcile. I mean, you know, having two Blue Beetles in a show, having two Flashes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The things that before people would have said, oh, that's too confusing. The average viewer won't get that at all. And, you know, I don't care. We don't care on this show, so I'll catch up, you know.
Absolutely. And also, and we've been, you know, leaning so hard on heroes, the great old villains that we literally haven't seen since a lot of those 50s and 60s old-fashioned comics and stuff. I mean, that's been a pleasure to see as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, I don't know what a real six-year-old is thinking about when they watch the show. I mean, because to me, that the older designs that we're using may seem old-fashioned, but I don't know if a six-year-old hasn't been exposed to this stuff, then pretty much anything you put in front of them is going to be bright and shiny new to them. So I don't worry about it. You know, and for some, the Batman, you know, there's a certain age group that will look at this Batman and go, ugh, hate it. A Batman was my Batman.
Sure.
And, you know, that's okay.
Absolutely.
Know? Batman is that kind of character. He's flexible like that. He can take different, you know, in incarnations, and that's the beauty of his character. So.
Well, now, you guys have kind of teased a little bit in terms of mentioning Haunted Tank and the Zather Batman and that. What other things can you tease as this second season starts to unfold, different people we might be seeing, or whatever hints you're willing to give us now?
Tomorrow, Friday, we are airing our GSA episode, which
wow,
you know, I think will be fun for a lot of old-time fans. I don't know, James, you want to talk about who's showing up?
You know, well, I just want to preface by, it's not going to be the whole JSA, so don't write us and tell those guys, how could they leave out Sandman, and how could they exist. We just, for the purpose of this story, we couldn't hire 20 actors.
How many JSA characters are in the story?
Let's see. There's Black Canary. There's, well, we reconciled the Black Canary issue, because there's this, basically, we have the Golden Age and the Silver Age Black Canary in one show.
Nice.
You'll see how it works out.
Sure.
When we do it. But we have the Flash, we have Hawkman, we have Dr. Midnight, we have Our Man, and am I missing someone? Wildcat,
of course.
Outstanding.
It's not so much about the Justice Society as it is. I mean, another thing that goes through this series, I think, is the idea of, there's two things. The idea of legacy, the legacy of superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of family amongst superheroes. And those are two big themes that come up in this show, this episode that airs tomorrow. And it shows us how Batman kind of trained to be a hero, and the JSA is involved in that. And it touches on the idea of legacy with, you know, heroes who have been there in this universe before Batman showed up. So it's kind of trying to take the idea of Earth 1 and Earth 2 and blending them together a little.
Sure.
Because, you know, in my head, I'm always trying to see, okay, where the timeline. I'm not a big continuity nut, but since I wanted to use these heroes who are going to be older than Batman, I had to, you know, we had to kind of explain how does that work. So, and in the story, you'll see that Batman was trained by certain JSA members. And,
well, and we saw that in the first season where you kind of said that Wildcat was...
Right. So it's something we kind of have teased already.
Yeah.
You get a little more information now, and the villain is Per Degaton.
Awesome.
You know, it's got a lot of goodies in it, and we did I don't want to spoil it, but we have a newsreel.
You spoiled it.
Okay, well, I guess. It's really cool. I thought it turned out really well. And the teaser is...
What is the teaser?
The teaser is... a character dear to my heart, Detective Chimp.
Ah, yes.
Wow, fantastic.
And Detective Chimp will be showing up multiple times this season.
Hilarious.
That's...
So, I mean, that's an example of me not... I go, there's a Detective Chimp?
Sure.
That is so ridiculous. Let's put him in multiple episodes. But, you know, then the twist on it, it's like, okay, we'll take him completely serious. And not just take him serious, but he's going to be, like, the coolest character on screen. So he's like Detective Chip meets James Bond.
Yeah.
Carmine Infantino thanks you.
Yeah. Well,
the creator of Detective Chip, absolutely.
Exactly. But, so, again, that's a case where the main story is kind of really serious, but the teaser is fun.
And, just silly.
It's silly. It's silly, good silly, though. Not, I prefer to think of it as outrageous and audacious as opposed to just dumb. You know, I don't do anything dumb. I mean, you know, talking about villains, the way I pick villains for teasers sometimes or little incidental is I'll go online and I'll do Google searches for the worst villains of all time. How do we put them in there in a fun, like, not goofy or dumb way? So, you know, because of that, you know, Ten-Eyed Man will make an appearance.
I love the Ten-Eyed Man. I think I'm the only person that loves the Ten-Eyed Man.
Well, I think when he appears on our show, you'll find out differently. There's a whole cult of Ten-Eyed Man fans.
Yay.
Come out of the woodwork.
Hey, and I know I had told Winston we've only got 45 minutes. Am I keeping you guys from dinner or anything like that? Are we okay?
Yeah, we're stuck here anyway.
Oh, are you really? Oh, man. Oh, are you guys alarming?
Never. In.
They don't let us out. They don't let us, yeah.
Does DC, you know, is every character available to you guys that you want? I mean, is there anybody that says, no, you can't use X character because they're in development for something else or whatever?
Let me set the record straight, because someone misquoted me as far as saying I didn't want to use, or that we didn't want to use Superman or Wonder Woman.
Yes.
We desperately want to use them, but they're not available to us.
Interesting. Okay.
That's the record. It's not like I don't want to use them. The only thing I said was that in the actual Brave and the Bold comic, Superman never appeared. And so I wasn't in a rush to have to use him. But, yeah, I'd love to use them, but they're not available to us at this time.
Interesting.
Hopefully that'll change, but you know, on the flip side, for every character we can't use, right. I mean, there's literally 20 characters we can use.
Sure.
Yeah,
so
yeah, we're not hurting.
I know. In fact, you know, there's some people, it might make production easier if we were limited a little bit more, but, you know, James always, like, I always try to be sensible and say maybe we could repeat this character, and James is like, no, let's throw in, you know, I'll design 5 more new characters that we haven't used before. So.
Well, like, we have this scene coming up in a show where it's basically the losers bar.
Okay.
And it's basically, it's not even C-list Batman characters, it's C-list characters, and they all hang out at this bar. And there's like 20 of them in there, I guess. And, you know, they could have been just miscellaneous thugs that we've already designed. But instead, Ben Jones and I went through, thank God they're for the internet, because we probably wouldn't have been able to find as many obscure 50s Batman Z-list villains as we did to populate this bar. And so anyway, that'll be coming up in an upcoming show. And, I mean, it's going to be a you know, people are going to really have to search to find these characters. But every single one of them exists, I swear to God.
And they create work for themselves on the show all the time like that. I mean, you know, there's that great scene where Green Arrow and Batman fight the prison break. They're capturing the villains, and the script just calls for, you know, nondescript villains. And, you know, James, of course, has to design characters who, I mean, can we legally say who they're based on?
Yeah, well, everyone knows. They're based on the old Adam West 60s show.
It was, sweet.
Yeah, so we did, you know, I kind of think of Batman as all one thing, so... You know, we may reference the 50s villains, but we also may reference the made-up 60s villains from the TV show. We may even reference the Filmation show from the 70s as far as villains, you know. You might see Sweet Tooth in the background or something, you know.
Cool. Is there, because the Batman 60s show was produced by Fox Television, is there a problem with trying to use some of those old characters directly?
It hasn't been lately.
Okay, that's cool. Well, no, and you know, even in the comics, Nunzio DeFilippis and Christina Weir did a wonderful King Tut story. But
I actually really liked that. I read that, and the art was amazing.
You bet.
You know, I think as long as we don't name them, you know, as long as they're cameos in the background, we're okay. If we give them like lines and stuff, and you know,
then it gets done.
I hope to God they resolve that, because that's
no shit.
Greatest series that's not on DVD, and that's a shame that kids don't have access to that show.
You know,
remastered with full color and the way it looked when it first aired, because it's a great show. It's very inventive, and it opens up the world of comics to people, kids, and you know, it's a shame. They really need to get that handled.
We've got a great local affiliate in Chicago that actually does show the old show in syndication and has the new prints of the episodes. You're absolutely right. And also, God, that DVD of the movie.
Looks, oh yeah, the remastered Blu-ray one.
Oh yeah, I mean I mean, really, what a avalanche of beautiful colors and everything that just wash over you. It's crazy how beautiful that movie is.
Yeah, it's a lot of work to do that kind of stuff. That's kind of what we, each episode we go in, and we you know, there's no such thing as a stock background in our show. I mean, maybe the Batcave, but, you know, he's hardly in it in this show. So there's not a lot of reuse of materials that we create for each episode. None of them carry over to the next show, except Batman, and maybe the Batmobile. So it's a real labor of love for all the people involved with the show to have to create all these new backgrounds and new characters, and it's just a lot of work across the board. And everyone, Batman's the only character I think that really brings that out in people. That just they bring their A game to it. So, big shout out to my entire crew and who helped make this show happen.
Well, here as a viewer, I mean, it's all you guys are really doing an exceptional job and making a very entertaining series that I do look forward to. And it's great that we're back in a cycle of new episodes. How long is this cycle of new episodes going to last?
We did 26.
Well, but I'm saying, because I know sometimes they break them up in terms of when they air.
I know following the GSA one, we got a Sidekicks episode coming up, so we're going to see sort of like a Teen Titans episode.
I was going to ask. I saw an IMDb, a Sidekicks Assemble, and it almost cried out to be a Teen Titans episode.
And I think it's fun. I mean, you see a little bit of a rivalry between the adults and the kids. I mean, and that's another one of our shows where the teaser is related to the main episode. We've done that like once before.
Okay.
Now, following that, what is following that, James?
Is it Firestorm?
First, Starro one, I think. We also have a Starro sort of arc that's going to be coming into play a little bit more clearly, I believe, after that Sidekicks episode.
Well, you saw the Challengers teaser, and that's...
Yes.
Basically, this season we're structuring, we have a two-part, mid-season finale. But leading up to that, we're going to have three teasers, and you saw the first one with the Challengers that reveals that Starro is lurking in the background. So we have two more teasers that will further that storyline, and then we'll have a big two-part huge story to kind of that'll be the story, is the big Starro invasion.
Outstanding. Wow, that's great. And I saw on IMDb one of my favorite teams will be making an appearance, the Metal Men.
Oh yeah!
Oh yes! I believe Metalman is the one that's following the Sidekicks one, and I think they come off pretty charming in that episode.
Yeah, I love the Metalman. I think that and it's a pleasure to be the first show to really have them. If you don't count Mighty Orbots in the 80s, but they came off really well. I think they'll be the new fan favorites, I think, this season.
I mean, because the challenge with our show is because we're bringing, so many new characters. Every episode is almost like a pilot for a new show.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's like you do a Metalman episode, and there's five characters that you have to come up with personalities for, and they have to seem different and interesting, and that's tough doing it like for one show. And we never know quite how these characters are going to turn out, but I think in the case of the Metalman, they all, each one of them has a pretty good distinct personality and comes off really well.
I enjoyed watching the thread carry from last season, what you guys did with the Outsiders, and seeing them progress, and I thought, there was a basis of possibly a spinoff.
Yeah, and in fact, the next time you see them on this, the whole idea was to lead them into being the Outsiders we know in the comics. And granted, I'm not sure if we did it exactly the best way, but I think I enjoyed the times they appeared. And
yeah,
starting them out younger was an interesting choice that some people quibble with. But by the end, they will be the Outsiders that everyone in comics know and love. But we show the journey, so I think it was a good choice, and I like the shows they've appeared in.
Very cool. And I got to ask about Wildcat. Is that the guy from Full Metal Jacket, the sergeant?
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. He's great. He loves doing it, and he's really in his Kubrick stories. So you got to love that.
No kidding. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he comes in, and all the other actors are like, sitting at his feet almost, listening to him tell these stories about working with the Stanley Kubrick show.
Absolutely.
Hilarious. But, you know, he's a really cool guy. Yeah.
Originally
when his name came up, I thought, well, gee, that's not exactly who I hear as Wildcat, but thank God we did use him. I think he nailed it.
And, yeah, James, I'm with you in terms of that's not a voice that I would think of either, but he really did, and it was coming from a direction I didn't expect. It totally fits.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, again, the way we're using Wildcat is being the Batman's mentor. And he's kind of Batman's surrogate father in this show. You know?
Yes.
He's the guy he went to and trained with when he decided to put on the costume. He had already been to Tibet and all that crap. But, you know, he needed someone to show him how to be a mystery man, you know. And so that's what Wildcat, and then we'll learn Friday that the Justice Society did for Batman. But Wildcat is the one he has the most personal relationship with, so. And, you know, he's his surrogate dad. So, you know, we needed that fatherly touch that I think Arlie Ermey brought to the character.
And I think you fell into a kind of neat little synchronicity of continuity because, again, being the comic nerd that I am, Wildcat was inspired by the Golden Age Green Lantern, and that's why he put his costume on in the 40s. And also was in the same city, and that was Gotham City.
Gotham, right. Yeah, that I knew. I knew that the original JSA stories were, I guess, in Gotham, right?
That's right. Even though it was, I guess, the All-American Comics versus National Comics when they were still two separate companies.
Huh. Well, you know, it's all a blob in my head.
James.
Yeah, because I don't know.
And Michael will invite you to the next Dungeons & Dragons game, and you'll be able to play, too.
I don't want Michael tainted. He doesn't need to know anything about comics.
It's too late, okay? Once I'm a Nightman and Haunted Tank,
right, yeah,
or, you know,
yeah,
I'm pretty much indoctrinated.
Right, that's the nerd. Your nerd membership is sealed there.
Cool. More war characters from DC, then? I mean, you mentioned the Haunted Tank. I can't help but think of the Losers and Sergeant Rock and some of the other great.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't intend it that way, but there's at least one of those people is coming up, and
cool.
One that you probably couldn't ever guess that I will keep secret.
It's a very cool teaser, and the tone of it is, you know,
Private Ryan and cyborgs.
So, I mean, that's the great thing about this show. One week we're doing goofy Aquaman in an
RV,
and then next week we're doing Batman's parents get killed.
Yeah.
But mostly, we, you know, because we have that sort of light, fun tone, we seem to be able to get away with, you know, pushing the edges on the darker stuff.
Yeah, that's a good question. Has anything been cut? Or, you know, ooh, don't forget this is a Y7 show. No problems with that?
We are surprised. I think at least I'm continually surprised by what we get away with. I mean, every week it's like, well, they'll probably call this, but let's see what they say. And they're like, nope. I think part of it, they're like, well, this is a kid's show, you know, so they're not reading it with those necessarily.
Well, I think the style of the show, and I think there's a problem. That's the only thing I find is that people look at they look at a still from the show, and they look at the design, and it's more cartoony, for lack of a better word, and they immediately write it off as kiddie. And so they underestimate it, when really, subtextually, we have a lot of dark stuff in the show, and I think our kill count is pretty high. We're going higher this season.
Wow.
So, but it's almost like people underestimate it based on how friendly it looks. But you know, I mean, we're showing the, you know, I think our Wayne, the Waynes walking into that dark alley is probably the bleakest image I think I've ever seen animated of Batman's origin. And we actually Gilda Lily this season with the Joe Chill show, where we actually show it. So
wow,
yeah, and it's dark. I mean, I just finished editing it, and it was dark. It's probably darker than I'm comfortable with, but I think that'll appeal to a certain segment of fans. But it's bleak.
Yeah, we push things. I mean, you know, it may not feel like our show at the end of the day, but, you know, one of our rules is that we don't necessarily have any rules.
Right.
So it's like, well, we'll try just about anything, and just so the viewer's not, like, going to know what's coming from week to week.
Yeah, I mean, one week it'll be Aquaman's Outrageous Adventure, and the next week is going to be Chill of the Night or some dark, deadly serious kind of episode. So
it sounds like Chill of the Night is going to maybe take a page from that old 50s story when Batman kind of confronted Joe Chill?
Well, actually, it's two stories. It's the story where he finds out his father wore a Batman costume once.
Classic.
And then it's the other story where he finds out that Joe Chill was actually a hired gun. And that's something that hasn't been done in any form, I don't think, live action or animated. So we mushed those two stories together into one story, and it actually surprisingly works.
Wow.
You know, and I think they did something in the Untold Legend of Batman in the John Byrne and or Jim Aparo and I forget.
Maybe Marty Pascoe or somebody? I'm trying to think, too.
Yeah, I don't remember. It was a miniseries from the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
There was basically all those stories that led up to Batman's origin. Anyway, we went back to the original source material and combined those two stories into Chill of the Night, and it's very, so far it's turning out to be one of the darkest shows I've ever worked on, and I, you know, going back through Superman Dark Side stories.
Yes.
And, you know, Batman Beyond and Justice League, I mean, it's still darker than any of that.
Wow.
It's bleak. So,
well, that's great. Well, that should satisfy, again, those fans of that era of the Bruce Timm era and stuff that, you know, because those were great stories. And, the Dark Side story, what a great way to wrap up the Superman series.
Well, you know, originally that wasn't supposed to wrap up the Superman.
No kidding.
It was supposed to open it up to a whole new set of storylines, but we didn't get more episodes to capitalize on it. But yeah, so it ended up being for the best because, you know, we kind of ended on that, and then we ended up using those threads in Justice League. So it worked out for the best, but yeah, it wasn't intended to be that way. But I just finished editing the Joe Chill one last week, and hadn't worked with this type of Batman in so long that it was kind of depressing. So I hope that's good for the fans because I'm like, wow, I haven't worked on Batman Dark in so long that it was like, wow, I'm ready for the big, bright blue Batman again. So yeah, I'm glad that's not our typical story, but we wanted to do that story just to let people know we could do that story.
I warned James, too. I go, are you sure? Are you sure?
He's
like, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wow.
We got it back. He's like, oh, that makes me sad.
No, that's cool. Hey, man, that's like when I was 9 years old, that's when I read Jerry Conway's classic Gwen Stacy dying Spider-Man story, and it didn't scar me. It blew my mind in a great way in terms of, you know, it really hit me in the drama sense that we were talking about earlier about the Adam West series, that's what, you know, the kids watching that show took from it was that it was high drama for them.
Sure, yeah. And so, yeah, some kid whose first exposure to Batman is this show will get the origin of Batman, and you know, I mean, he'll be old Batman the next week, but
sure.
For this one particular episode, he's going to be kind of serious and dark and scary because he's finding out about his parents' murder and stuff. But
wow!
But it's also done in a brave and the bold sort of way, as much as we can. I mean, you know, we use supernatural elements for it. You know, that's got specters in it and Phantom Stranger.
Oh, cool!
So that's the one that, you know, Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill are playing.
Kevin Conroy's playing the Phantom Stranger, and Mark Hamill's playing the Spectre. And it's really
interesting.
Yeah, because so, it's kind of the gist of the story, not to go too deep into it, is that the Spectre and Phantom Stranger represent two halves of Batman. Like, you know, Spectre's all about vengeance, and I think Phantom Stranger's kind of about understanding. He's not out. He's one of those. He's like the Watcher. He just wants to see what's going on and reconcile it and make sure people bring good out of bad, you know. At least in our story it is. I don't know what he's doing lately in the comics, but, you know, he's kind of the opposite of the Spectre. He's a supernatural character who's trying to find goodness in people, and the Spectre's trying to eradicate evil. And they use Batman's kind of their pawn because he can go either way. And so, without going into detail, that's kind of what the gist of the story is. So that's where the brave and the bold element comes in, is that they're both otherworldly characters. Because without them, it would just be another episode of Batman the Animated Series. But
interesting. That's great, guys. Man, and you know, Deadman was another wonderful first season episode, I thought, too.
Yeah, it was fun using that kind of character.
and figuring out a way where he made sense, and also bringing in Gentleman Ghost. You know, we were not very arky in this show, but we did like three Gentleman Ghost appearances that kind of told his story and how he came to be. And I think in a pretty original way, so it's fun to do that kind of thing with a character that no one really gives a shit about.
No, you're right. Honestly, guys, and I mean this, I give it up to you guys in the best way, because it is. It is very entertaining, and clearly I hope that even listeners of the interview will see the love and respect you guys have for the characters, and that if they ever had a preconceived notion and haven't watched this series, that they will tune in, because it's pretty obvious that you guys do love the material you're working with and are finding innovative ways to bring it back, dust it off, and give it a new spin. So, really, nice going.
Well, thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
That's the whole goal of the show. And I mean, given the general reception the show got when it actually went on air, I didn't think we had nearly as hard a time as I thought we would. So
I know. I thought there'd be at least a year before we won anybody over, but I don't know. I think we did okay.
Yeah. Well, and
I think people get that we don't hate Batman, or we don't have we don't disrespect him.
Yes.
It's just a broader take on the character, but it's basically the same guy as. It's the same guy who was in the Nolan films. It's the same guy who was in the Burton films. It's the same guy who was on Beta. It's just a different shading, you know, going back to basics with him.
Well, it's the character is in good hands, and the series is excellent on Cartoon Network, and the new episodes always air on Fridays. We get repeat episodes on Saturdays, and I know also it runs sometimes in the morning, depending on the schedule.
Yeah, all over the place.
Yeah, but that's great.
Cool.
And you know, keep it up, man. I'm sure this is a full-time responsibility. Are you guys going to be doing any more with some of the direct-to-DVD department?
Well, I know Michael's doing other projects with them, but I don't know if he can talk about them.
Yes, I may or may not be involved, but nothing major, I will say, but on a smaller scale, I have some stuff that's coming in the pipeline, hopefully, for that the direct-to-video stuff.
Excellent. And by the way, I don't want to shit on Public Enemies. If either of you, or even my friend Jeff Loeb, who wrote the original story, I thought that was an excellent direct-to-DVD animated film as well. I honestly think where some of the misfires of films like Catwoman and some of those misfires that we had earlier in the decade, as far as the movies go, DC's animated division has really been firing on all cylinders. And even someone who, as myself, who wasn't a big fan of Teen Titans Go, I certainly appreciated and was pleased to see the amount of love that the fans had for the show. And there's a reason why that thing lasted for six seasons.
Yeah,
so.
I think now it's a great time to be a DC fan. I mean, if you want a lighter take on the characters, you got us. If you want a PG 13 take, you've got the DVDs. The movies are finally getting some initiative to be cohesive and try to put something out regularly that's good. I think there's a lot of good work coming out of Warner Brothers now in regards to the DC line, and the comics haven't been better. So it's a good time for fans, I think. And, of course, fans being fans, it's never enough, but that's okay.
Sure.
That's okay. I'm glad they want more.
Did this change, and I don't know how much you guys are aware of this, but, you know, near the end of the year, there was an announcement that on the comics side, it sounds like there is kind of a reformation and a more of an alignment with Warner's proper, rather than DC Comics kind of being the intellectual property laboratory that it was prior to that. I don't know if that affects how you guys do business at all or not.
We kind of were underway while or before that stuff kind of happened. So
sure.
Should we get a third season, we'll probably see the effects of that, if any.
Yeah, I think the dust is still sort of settling on that, and everyone's still trying to figure out what the rules are going to be and how business is going to be done in this sort of new regime. But so far we've been, left to our own devices.
Yeah, it's I mean, again, it's nice. Because people tend to leave us alone. There's bigger fish to fry.
Sure.
The Batman movie franchise. And when you got that going on, we're kind of under the radar a little bit. It's good. You know, I mean, we only exist to keep him out in the public until the next movie comes along.
sell toys.
Which is fine. I'm happy with that. That's great, you know. And
will that dictate the life of the cartoon if, you know, I mean, in the same, I guess, sort of way that the Chris Nolan films put an end to the Bruce Timm era?
Well, you know, that's not true.
Okay, no, good. I appreciate the clarification.
Popular knowledge, or it's popular, you know.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
You know, we were doing Justice League at the same time the Batman was getting underway. It's just, you know, nothing about the movie prevented us from doing Batman. The only thing it prevented us was using certain characters like the Joker and stuff, which helped us in Justice League, because I think the things people liked about Justice League were things we had to push to. We had to use other new characters on that because we couldn't use Joker and Penguin, which, you know, on Justice League, why would you need to use them anyway? But anyway.
Agreed. Yes.
That's you know, I'm going off tracks there. But.
No, I appreciate the clarification because, yeah.
There's a lot of misconceptions about why certain things didn't happen. You know, like the whole thing with Legion supposed to being a spinoff from Justice League. You know, that Supergirl was originally going to be in Legion. That was never going to happen.
I never heard that. That's interesting. I never heard that.
Well, you know, of course, Michael and I are addicted to these message boards.
Sure. No, I understand, man.
You know, there's like just a, you know, just a cesspool of misinformation. But
do you have any inside information in terms of, and really, I don't want anyone telling stories out of school. But in terms of the Justice League cartoon, which seemed to be such a monumental hit within the fandom, and that, yes, it maybe wasn't appealing to the amount of 7-year-olds, but I know that there were a bunch of 30 and 40-year-old fans that, you know, really, the amount of married friends of mine that had to explain to their wives why they had to watch this half-hour show, it would crack me up. And the wives would just shake their heads and like, no, you don't understand. These guys are really taking it to levels of, you know, drama that, you know, again, growing up on the Super Friends, these guys had never seen before.
Yeah, well, you know, going into that, we knew we just wanted to do West Wing with capes, and that's our motto. And, you know, I mean, the thing with that and with any show is that with cartoons, 52 is the magic number. If you do anything beyond 52, it's a gift. It's not, you know, it's not like regular TV shows like Friends or something that goes on for 8 years or whatever.
Sure.
Cartoons have a limited shelf life because, frankly, kids watch reruns like they're new.
I understand. Well, is it that mindset of, you know, those 7-year-olds, once they're, you know, 9-year-olds, it's time to, like you said, just show the reruns to the new 7-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we were kids, we watched the same Popeye cartoon 50 times a month. You know,
you're like, right.
You know, I mean, and basically cartoons exist in America, at least for kids. True. Not counting the stuff on at night for Adult Swim and Fox and all that stuff.
But, or the Flintstones before it back in the 60s, too.
You know, if our shows appeal to fans, it's because we want it appeals to adults. That's just because we chose to do that, and the network didn't bother noticing. It's not like someone said, oh, make a superhero show that appeals to adults and, you know, is very well written and deep and dark and explores all these. No one asked us to do that. You know, no one will ever come to you and ask you to make that kind of show. So, you know, we just did it because we wanted to, but and no one said not to, but, you know. Well, but, you know, Justice League was a great run, and, you know, I mean, we got the thing is now the DVDs are kind of taking over what that show used to, the niche that show.
Absolutely.
Did. So, you know.
No, and I know that did make a lot of fans very happy that development came out of it. And we, as you say, yes, we've gotten some wonderful projects, and I'm glad, Michael, that you're, you know, able to work on those. And like I said, it's clear from the Wonder Woman movie, for example, that, you know, you've got the right sensibility. And when those things do come to light, I know that everyone is very careful of what they announce and when they can talk about stuff. In fact, Kerry Russell and Nathan Fillion were on a panel. I was on a panel with Nathan Fillion in Orlando, and he's just like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm doing the Wonder Woman cartoon. And this was like, you know, 2 years before I think Greg Nowak was really wanting to make that public. And he, like, his eyes got wide. He's like, who told you this? I'm like, well, Nathan Fillion. Sorry, man.
Well, you know, I don't think Michael has gotten nearly enough credit as being a part of this whole DC animated universe. You know, Alan gets the credit and Paul gets the credit, and rightfully so. Michael is right up there with those guys.
That's cool.
He's kind of he's not a, and not to say those guys are self-promoters, but everyone knows those guys. And Michael kind of, he's a little soft-spoken, but if you like Batman's the Batman season 4, it's because of Michael. If you like season 2 of Legion of Superheroes, it's because of Michael. If you like most of Batman Brave and the Bold, it's because Michael is, you know, there.
None of it was James. Is all
well, no, I'm the geek factor, but, you know.
No. It, that's very nice of James to say, but at the end of the day, I work in animation, and you know, I always say it's not a writer's medium, and so, you know, I'm here to
serve. He's the only writer who knows that.
I'm here to serve the artist. That's sort of what you see.
You'll never hear another writer say that.
It's true. I mean, that's why I like Bruce and James, and, you know, and I think the successful writers in animation sort of are able to, you know, bring sort of a point of view, but at the end of the day, what you see are the drawings, and you hear the voices, and so I don't know. I feel fortunate to take credit for other people's work. So.
Well, but Michael, I will say respectfully, and again, growing up for, you know, the decades that I have watching animation and watching simplified dialogue, it's really nice that in the same way that comic books have been allowed to grow up, that animation in America has been allowed to grow up as well, and that, you know, an adult can watch. You know, I again, Public Enemies, perfect example. I watched that with a guy in his 50s, and he was like, I can't believe how sophisticated this story is compared to the cartoons we grew up with. And it, again, it's a credit to, I think, you guys and also the powers that being allowing you guys to tell smarter stories with smarter characterization and smarter dialogue.
Well, the whole world's changed. Now everyone thinks they're a nerd. You know, everyone we've kind of taken over the whole public, the popular culture, you know, and it's cool to be a nerd, and everyone has raised, I don't know, raised or lowered their level to nerddom. And so, you know, they can, I don't think you could have done that kind of show. The things we're doing now, no one would have paid for them to be made back in the 70s or 60s or even 80s. I mean, if you remember the whole furor over Tim Burton's Batman, nobody thought you could do Batman seriously before that. You know, it was always a struggle, you know, and it was the hardest movie to sell until they finally did, and he made it, and it made a gajillion bucks, and then yep. Now it set the tone for everything that came after, for good or ill, you know.
True.
But, you know, people are accepting of different ways of doing superheroes. And, you know, that superheroes are kind of our American myth. You know,
no question.
That's America's mythological characters. You know, that's our history, you know, up there in capes and tights and stuff. You know, our contribution to culture. You know, that and jazz and other stuff. But you know what I'm saying? It's like,
I do.
You know, that's a uniquely American, you know, art form, ideal that, you know. So, you know, it's great that we were able to do it now, and people take it fairly seriously. I mean, again, they took it too seriously to a point where no one could accept a lighter take on it. And so, you know, but I think now, thank God for the Nolan movie. Thank God that there was enough of the serious, dark takes on heroes that this would feel, fresh. I think if we had tried to do this kind of show immediately after the Adam West show, it would have, well, they did. It was called, you know, The New Adventures of Batman.
Yes, I remember it well.
You know, but, you know, I think we're doing a little better than that. But
definitely. Yeah. No, and I think you're right. And I think we're reaching a balance where the hardcore older fans are becoming more accepting of the lighter fare that they used to dismiss. And again, it re-energizes this young base and gives them a palatable version of the character that they can grow up on, much as we grew up, James, on the reprints. Of those Golden Age and Silver Age stories.
Well, I was, you know, again, to use another quote I've used often, is that this show is kind of like those 100-page spectaculars where you had a new Batman story at the beginning, and then the rest was reprints from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
You got it.
That was my introduction to Batman. So all that Batman in the different eras is all one Batman in my head. So that's kind of what we do on this show, is just use every different version and meld them into this one guy. And, you know, I didn't think there was any difference between any of those Batman, so that's what we're doing on the show.
Well, and you're succeeding. And guys, honestly, thank you so much for, because I see now that we've been talking for almost an hour and 20 minutes. And
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, no. And honestly, I know it's dinner hour, your time, so I'll let you guys go.
Okay.
Go eat. Go do something. But no, seriously, thank you so much. You guys are always welcome back. It was a really great conversation. I like looking behind the scenes on shows like this, and I that's what I hope to do with this show, is give people a better perspective of what goes into a program like this and beyond the 22 minutes we get to see every week. So thank you for pulling the curtain back and really telling us how it's done, and continued success. I look forward to the episodes coming up.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for your support.
Two of the producers of Batman the Brave and Bold, James Tucker and Michael Jelinek. Don't forget, the show airs 7:30 Eastern and Pacific Time Friday nights on Cartoon Network with reruns throughout the weekend. It sounds like a lot of great episodes are on the way, and storylines as well. Thanks again to Mike and James for a very great conversation, and I look forward to talking to them in the future. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you to find Word Balloon right here at wordballoon.com, where you'll find our archive of well over 300 interviews with other great comic book creators and animation people and film and television people as well. Also, check us out at newsarama.com and at iTunes as well if you want to subscribe to our feed. Questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. You could also reach me on my Facebook page under my name, John Suntress, or follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon. Lots of great stuff coming up in the days and weeks ahead. It's become a very busy January very quickly, and that's a good thing for both me and you. Lots of interesting interviews on the way. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.